So I guess it seems like you've somehow figured out that like this is the right half of the room to sit in because I always start over here, and somehow you've self-organized. So I just noticed that. Okay. So last time we saw the first example of a computational problem that we could solve faster with a quantum computer, and there we could actually prove that the quantum algorithm was better, that it was in fact exponentially better, but only for deterministic query complexity. And I mentioned that you can make a better example where you can get an exponential speed up really of quantum computing with respect to randomized computing in the black box model. But you know, ultimately, we would like to solve problems not in the black box model, but in the real world, problems like factoring. So this is what we're going to see next, is how to develop a quantum algorithm for factoring. But in order to do this, we need to develop a little bit of technology first. So today we're going to talk about something called the phase estimation problem, which is not a classical computational problem. It's really a quantum problem where we want to estimate some property of some quantum gate. And in order to solve this problem, we'll use the quantum Fourier transform, which is also an important primitive in quantum computing. So it's a unitary operation that shows up in a lot of quantum algorithms. But in particular, it will allow us to solve this phase estimation problem in a rather nice way. Okay, so what we saw before in the Deutsch-Jose algorithm was that we used Hadamard gates a lot to make the algorithm work. And you know, we did this sort of transform that we could think about in quantum states, where we apply Hadamard gates to each of some subset of n qubits. So this is some kind of transform that we're applying to the quantum state. And we saw that it caused some amplitudes to interfere in a nice way that made information about the solution to the problem come out. And so the quantum Fourier transform you can really think of as a generalization of this Hadamard transform that is useful for solving other kinds of problems, for getting other kinds of information about quantum states. Okay, so the phase estimation problem, let me just state what the phase estimation problem is, and we won't yet see today how it relates to the factoring algorithm. That'll be the subject of tomorrow's lecture. But for now, let's just imagine that this is a problem that we want to solve and see what we can do about it. Okay, so phase estimation is as follows. We're going to be given some unitary operation U. And when I say we're given it, the sense in which we're given it will be important. So certainly we'll have to be able to implement that unitary operation. So one way to be given it would be, say, to be given a quantum circuit that would apply it to an unknown quantum state. So, say by a quantum circuit. So we would be able to run phase estimation if we were just given a quantum circuit that allowed us to perform the unitary operation U. But the efficiency of performing phase estimation actually will depend on your ability to implement U. And in particular, we'll see that it'll be important actually to be able to implement very high powers of U efficiently in order to be able to do phase estimation really, really fast. So we'll see some of these details later on once we see what the circuit actually is. But for now, just to say what the problem is, we've got some unitary operation U, and we know something about it that at least allows us to apply it to an unknown quantum state, say we're given a quantum circuit. And then the other thing that we're going to be given is actually a quantum state, which lives in the same Hilbert space that U acts on. So and a quantum state psi, which is actually promised to be an eigenstate of U. So it should be the case that U acting on psi is e to the I phi acting on psi. So U is a unitary operation. So its eigenvalues, of course, are all on the unit circle in the complex plane. So we can write them in the form e to the I phi for some real number phi. So this e to the I phi, phi is some phase that specifies the eigenvalue of the eigenstate psi. Now, of course, later on we'll think about the case where we don't necessarily have an eigenstate, and we could think about decomposing any state into a superposition of eigenstates, and then we can think about what phase estimation does, acting in superposition on all of those eigenstates. But for now, let's just think about the case where we're actually given just one eigenstate of the unitary, and if we can understand that case, we'll be fine for understanding the general case. Okay, so this is the problem. So are there questions about this setup, what it is that we're trying to do? Okay, so we somehow would like to make up a quantum circuit that involves invocations of the gate U, and uses other gates and somehow gets out some information about this phase phi. Oh, I guess I should have said that, right? So the problem is to estimate phi. I guess you probably could have guessed that from the name of the problem. But that's what the goal is. And we don't necessarily want to compute phi exactly, but just we want to get some good estimate of it. Okay. Now, one thing to notice, actually, is that it will be essential that we can not just perform you. I mean, if we were given you completely as a black box, and we just had the ability to apply you to a state rather than being given a quantum circuit, then there would be a problem, right? Which is, how do we tell you from you times some global phase? They would be physically indistinguishable, and so there would actually be no way to get out this phi. So there has to be some reference that you can use to have some reference phase that you can compare things against. And what we'll actually use in the circuit for phase estimation will be a controlled U gate. So we actually need to be able to perform. We need to be able to perform a controlled U gate. And maybe you've seen this on some problems already, but just in case, let me make sure the notation is clear. So we're going to write a controlled U gate in a circuit like this. It's just like the generalization of the controlled NOT operation, but here we have a general unitary gate U. So this is a unitary. This whole thing is some, if this is an n qubit unitary, then this is an n plus 1 qubit unitary, where if we put in here some, there's some bit b, and here we put in some quantum state psi, then what comes out is, well, this is in the state b, and this is in the state u psi. U to the b psi. So if b equals 0, then nothing is done to the state. And if b equals 1, then the unitary u is applied to the state. Okay, so this is a controlled unitary gate. And we need to be able to do something like this in order to have some phase reference, right? So here, if we put in b equals 0, then the identity is applied. So that gives us some, phase of 1 that we can think about this phi as being relative to. Okay. Yes? Well, suppose that what I gave you was just some device, which was a quantum device, which just applied the unitary U to whatever quantum state you put in, right? So there could be some unitary that did this. So here it gives you U psi. But on the other hand, suppose I construct another box that does U times the global phase e to the I theta, right? Then I put in psi, and I get out e to the I theta U psi. But this state is completely indistinguishable from this one. So there's no way you'll ever be able to estimate information about the individual eigenvalues of U. You could maybe figure out things about, the relationships between two eigenvalues of U, but there would be no way you could estimate a phase like this using such a black box. Right? Because the global phase, there's no way to get information about a global phase of a quantum state. Whereas here, we're applying, we have the ability to make superpositions like psi plus u acting on psi, and so we can have information in a relative phase. Is this okay? Yes.
Is this u arbitrary u or?
Completely arbitrary unitary operation. Yeah. I mean, in order to be able to implement this phase estimation procedure efficiently, we will want u to be something we can do efficiently. So it should have a nice. It should have a small quantum circuit. And we'll see later on that we want to do high powers of U, so that'll put some further restrictions on the U's for which we can do this really efficiently. But if we don't worry about efficiency, certainly this U could be an arbitrary, completely arbitrary unitary operation. Yep. Okay, good. Other questions? All right. So now, how are we going to get out some information about the phi? Well, maybe the first thing to do to kind of get a feeling for how we could sort of get information out about these phases by using the unitary in the right way would be to think about a special case. So let's suppose that phi actually takes one of two possible values. So suppose we're promised that either phi is equal to 0 or phi is equal to pi. So these are two phases kind of as far apart as they could be from each other. And so this seems like maybe it would be the easiest case that we could think about. Okay, so what could we do? Well, what we're going to do is we're going to apply some kind of a circuit like this. So here's what we could do. Suppose we create some qubit in the plus state, which we could think about getting by applying a Hadamard gate to a qubit in the zero state. And then suppose we perform a controlled U gate. Right, what does this do? I'm going to add something onto this quantum circuit later, but let's just start analyzing what happens if we do this. Well, if we do this, the state that we have here is, 1 over root 2, 0 plus 1 psi. So that's the state here. And then if we apply the controlled unitary gate, what does that do? Well, if the first qubit is in the state 0, it does nothing. So here we're going to get 1 over root 2, 0 psi. And on the other hand, if the first qubit is in the state 1, then the unitary u gets applied to psi, but that just gives a phase times psi because psi is an eigenstate, right? So this is, you know, just by assumption. So this is plus, e to the I phi times 1 psi. I mean, I'm not even using yet the information that phi is either 0 or pi, but we'll use that in a second. Okay, but notice that because this thing was in an eigenstate of u, the two qubits are going to remain decoupled, right? So this is just 1 over root 2, 0 plus e to the I phi 1 psi. Okay, so the first qubit, if we now look at the fact that phi is promised to be either 0 or pi, that's the kind of special case we're considering, then this is either a plus state or a minus state, depending upon which of the two possibilities you have. Right? So we can get that information out by just performing a Hadamard gate here and then making a measurement. Right? And then we'll get some classical outcome. And if it's 0, then that means if it's 0, that means we got the plus state, so that meant that the phase was 0. So phi equals 0. And if we get 1, then that means that phi is equal to pi. Is that okay? And of course, you know, this qubit just comes out in the state psi because it was in an eigenstate and effectively nothing happened. So here you see why we needed, how we were using sort of this phase reference, right? So we were putting the information about the phase phi into the relative phase between the states 0 and 1. I mean, this is sort of like, you can sort of think about this as like interferometry, right? So we're putting the information about phi into the relative phase between 0 and 1, and then we can read that information out by performing a Hadamard gate so that we get the information back in the computational basis. Okay, questions about this? Okay. All right, so now, we didn't have any such promise that phi was either 0 or pi in the basic statement of the problem. You know, the idea was that phi could be an arbitrary real number, and we want to get some good, maybe we want to get a good n-bit estimate of phi for some general n, right? So this experiment is, giving us some information about phi, but we would like to, in principle, be able to get more. Okay, so there's a kind of natural most complicated assumption that we could make about phi, which is that, so you could think about this phi as being 2 pi times, either 0 or a half, or in other words, 2 pi times some binary fraction that has only one bit in it, right? So let's consider the case where we're promised that phi comes from some discrete set of values which have the form 2 pi times some integer over 2 to the n. Okay, so this will turn out to be kind of a natural next case to think about. So now suppose phi is equal to, 2 pi times some integer divided by 2 to the n, and I'm going to write that in the following form. So 0.x1, x2, et cetera, through xn. Okay, so by this, I mean this is an expression written in binary. So these xi's are all bits. So this is an n-bit binary fraction. Or you could think about it as, some integer divided by 2 to the n. There's some integer between 0 and 2 to the n minus 1. And if you write out that value in binary, then it looks like this. Okay, so the case that we had before was just where we only had n equals 1. But now we're going to consider the case where we have where we have n bits here. Okay. So now there's a natural sort of thing we could think about, which is to imagine what happens if we apply higher powers of u. Right? So here the way we got information out about the phase was to apply u once to the state, but let's think about what happens if we apply higher powers. Okay, so suppose we apply u to the and so what I'm going to consider in particular is applying powers of u that are powers of 2. So like u squared, u to the fourth, u to the eighth, et cetera. So let's apply u to the 2 to the k to psi and see what that does to the phase. Okay. So U to the 2 to the k times psi. Well, psi is just is an eigenstate of U with eigenvalue phi. So this is just going to multiply by e to the I phi 2 to the k times. That's all that happens. I mean, that's straightforward. But then what can we say about this value? Right? So e to the I phi to the power of 2 to the k. Now, we're going to use this assumption that phi has this special form. So this is e to the 2 pi I times 2 to the k times this binary expansion. But now multiplying by 2, you know, in binary is like multiplying by 10 in decimal, right? So if I multiply by 2 to the k, that's just shifting this binary point, I guess you call it, shifting this dot over to the right k times, right? If I multiply by 2 to the k. So this is x1, x2 through xk dot xk plus 1 through xn. Right? I'm just multiplying by a power of 2. Okay, but now this, notice that this is now completely irrelevant. Because here I have 2 pi times an integer, you know, e to the 2 pi I times an integer. This represents some integer written out in binary. And so, you know, that's just winding around the unit circle some integer number of times, you know, the number of times given by this integer written in binary. So this is nothing but e to the 2 pi I times the binary fraction 0.xk plus 1 through xn. Right? So what happens when I do this is I think about shifting this dot over to the right, and that removes information about some of the higher order bits of the, you know, this string that specifies what the phase phi is. And when I do that, it changes the form of the eigenvalue. So now the eigenvalue of u to the 2 to the k has less information in it actually about the bits of x. But now it's presented potentially in a way where it's easier to get information out. And in particular, suppose we do this with k equals n minus 1. Right? So in particular, so if I take u to the 2 to the n minus 1 times the eigenstate psi of u, what do I get? Well, I just get this with, you know, k equals n minus 1. So what that says is that only the least significant bit of this binary fraction remains, right? Everything else gets shifted off the front. So this is just e to the 2 pi I times 0.xn psi, right? So now what can I do? Suppose I have a circuit that involves controlled U gates and other gates. What can I do to learn this least significant bit, x sub n, of the phase? Right, I have this promise that the phase has this form, and I would like to somehow, you know, I would like to somehow learn what xn is. I can think of that as maybe getting a start on learning all the bits of x. Yes?
Well, now, aren't we essentially in the first situation?
Exactly. We're just...
Because we now have that promise that x is either 0 or 1.
So. Exactly. Exactly. So we're exactly back in the first situation if we replace u by u to the 2 to the n minus 1. So, so what that says is that, you know, if we do 0... Hadamard, controlled, now not a controlled u, but a controlled u to the 2 to the n minus 1, acting on the state psi. Okay, so here the state psi will just come out. And then I do a Hadamard, and I measure. This will just tell me the value of x sub n. The measurement outcome there is guaranteed to be x sub n, so I learn one bit of the phase. Okay, so this is, you know, a procedure which will allow us to learn the least significant bit of the phase when it's expressed like this, with this promise, of course, that it was an exact n-bit binary fraction, right? If there were some, you know, if there were some even less significant bits over here that were not zero, then this wouldn't work. But suppose that this, you know, we're supposing that the expansion really terminates after the bit x sub n, and if that's the case, then this will give us the least significant bit. Okay, so now what can we do? Well, we would like to get out some information about the more significant bits. So for example, you know, maybe we could try to next learn x sub n minus 1. And it turns out that there's a natural way to do that. So let's, you know, look at the state that we have for where we apply other powers of u. So similarly, well, if I apply u to the 2 to the n minus 2 acting on psi, now I shift off everything but the last two least significant bits. So then I have e to the 2 pi I times 0.xn minus 1 xn acting on psi. And now I'm not necessarily back in the case, you know, I'm not necessarily back in the original case, right? If I did this circuit and I learned that x sub n was equal to 0, then I actually am back in the original case because now this is just, you know, 0.xn minus 1, and this happens to be 0. So then I can just do like I did before. But on the other hand, it's possible that I do this experiment and I learn that x sub n is equal to 1. So if I do that, well, then I'm not back in the original case. But on the other hand, I know what the value of x sub n is. So I could just rotate away that phase myself. Right? So this is going to be kind of, I mean, maybe now you can sort of start to see what the whole procedure will be like. What we're going to do is we're going to, you know, use this to learn the least significant bit. It, you know, this is all in the case where we have this promise. We learn the least significant bit, and then we use the information about that to rotate away some phase in a state like this to learn the next least significant bit, and we can continue like this to actually learn all the bits of the phase. Okay. So this is what we're going to do, but what I want to do is I want to kind of develop this into the quantum Fourier transform so we can see how we can apply some quantum transform to really read out the final state by applying some unitary to the output of some particular quantum state that we make by applying controlled unitary gates. And so let's see how we can do that. So what we're going to need in order to do this whole procedure is we're going to need to apply u to various powers of 2 acting on the state. So let's put together all of the information that we might want to make use of in recovering the phase in this way. All right, so suppose we start with the following circuit. Okay, so we're going to have our copy of the state psi around, and that's going to be some kind of reference system that's just going to sit there. It's an eigenstate, and we're only going to apply powers of u to it, so it's never going to go out of the state psi. So that's fine. Now, the first thing that I can do is, I guess I can think about doing these things in any order, but let me think about just doing a controlled u gate first. So here I'm going to have a qubit in the zero state. I'm going to apply a Hadamard to it, and then I'm going to apply a controlled u. So at some point, I'm going to need this information. And then, I'm going to have n qubits, because I'm going to want to do n experiments that allow me to learn the n bits of this expansion of x. And I'm going to apply all the powers of u going from the first power this is 2 to the 0, u to the 2 to the 0, up to, you know, u to the 2 to the n minus 1. This will be the last one that I do. Okay, so here I'm going to do a controlled u to the 2 to the, you know, so this thing, to the n minus 2 from this qubit. And then up here, I'm going to do, the last thing I'm going to do is a controlled u to the 2 to the n minus 1. Okay, so I don't know why I insist on writing it in this order. I mean, of course, these unitaries commute, and so it doesn't matter what order you apply them to psi. So over here, we're going to have psi coming out. But I don't know. I just chose to draw it like this. Okay, so we have a bunch of qubits where we apply, u to the 2 to the I to them for I running from 0 up to n minus 1. Okay, and then let's remember what the qubits look like over on the right-hand side. So So it turns out that because of the structure of this thing, the final state is really just a tensor product state where we have some individual state for each of the qubits. So up here, what we have is just, this piece is just like the state that we had here, right? So this is where we had the state, you know, it was 1 over root 2, 0, plus e to the 2 pi I times 0 point xn, 1, right? This was the state that we Hadamard transformed, you know, up there. This was the state that we Hadamard transformed in order to get the bit x of n. And then, you know, the next qubit down has 0 plus e to the 2 pi I 0 dot xn minus 1 xn, 1. And then down here we have, you know, the original state that we started with. So this was the relative phase that we got. So here we have 1 over root 2, 0 plus e to the 2 pi I, 0 point x1 through xn 1. So this is our relative phase. And now our goal is, given a state that looks like this, apply some kind of a transformation to this state, which allows us to recover the bits x1 through xn. So are there questions at this point? Questions about what we're trying to do? Or about anything? Okay, so this is what we want to do. We want to apply some unitary transformation to this state that allows us to recover the string x1 through xn. It takes, it's, you know, ideally we would like it to take these n qubits and produce the computational basis state x1 through xn. And it turns out that that's possible. So actually these states are orthogonal to each other. If you consider all of the 2 to the n possible values of the string x1 through xn, the set of, you know, 2 to the n states that you could have for these n qubits actually form an orthonormal basis of the state space. And the transformation that transforms between that basis and the standard basis is exactly the quantum Fourier transform. So in particular, the thing we want to apply here to get the string x1 through xn is the inverse quantum Fourier transform. So the next thing I want to do is just show you what that transform actually looks like in a slightly different way. Okay, so the transformation that sends the you know, the top n qubits to, well, I guess we don't really care about the order in which we get the qubits out. So I mean the order that they'll actually come out when we do the transformation will be xn, xn minus 1, dot, 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 through x1. So they'll be, the order will actually be reversed from the way that they're written in the, you know, the way that they're written when we wrote out the n-bit binary fraction, because you see the top qubit over there will have, you know, we'll be able to easily transform that to xn. So this is the thing that we'll get out. And the thing that transforms the top n qubits to this state is the inverse, quantum Fourier transform. Okay, so in this course, unlike in maybe some of the other ones you're taking, when I write QFT, it doesn't mean quantum field theory. So this is a common abbreviation in quantum computing. Okay, so this is the inverse quantum Fourier transform. And so what we would like to see is, first of all, what does that Fourier transform look like? I mean, I've given you some kind of implicit description of it in terms of how it maps, well, you know, so it's the transformation that maps a set of states that look like this to the computational basis states. But let me write it down a little bit more explicitly. And then what we really want to see is how we can perform some small quantum circuit in order to actually recover these values. Okay, but first let's just see what the transformation looks like. Okay, so so this sends so a state that looks like 1 over the square root of 2 to the n. So, you know, we have n factors of 1 over the square root of 2. So let me just pull this factor up front as a 1 over the square root of 2 to the n. And then I have a bunch of qubits that look like 0 plus e to the 2 pi I 0 dot xn 1. And then the next qubit looks like 0 plus e to the 2 pi I 0 dot xn minus 1 xn 1. And then the last one is 0 plus e to the 2 pi I 0 dot x 1 through xn, 1. So it sends this to, you know, just to the state xn through x1. Okay, so let's take a look at this state and sort of simplify the form of it, because it looks a little bit messy the way that it's written here, but it turns out that there's a very concise way of writing this. So what is this? So this is 1 over the square root of 2 to the n times, well, okay, so this is some superposition over all of the computational basis states, right? If I were to unfold this expression, you know, just distributing things, I have terms where I could get any bit string, any n bit string y by taking, you know, I could take a 0 here and a 1 here and a 1 and a 1 and a 0, and I could get all of the possible strings of 2 to the n bits if I were to unfold this expression in different ways, right? So what I'm going to have here is going to be a sum over all the bit strings y. And what I would like to do is, you know, what I would like to do is somehow figure out what is the amplitude for every one of those bit strings. Now, the amplitude, you know, the magnitude of the amplitude will be the same for every one of those bit strings because, you know, I get every one of those bit strings exactly once by taking one particular choice of these terms, and every amplitude of every one of these states is just a phase, right? So all of the this will be a uniform superposition as far as amplitudes are as far as you know the magnitudes are concerned, where the magnitude of each amplitude will be 1 over the square root of 2 to the n. So what I really want to find here is, you know, what is the phase associated with every bit string y? Okay, so I forget what is the natural order to do this in. Let me just cheat and look so that I don't do it backwards and have to change things. Okay. Right. Okay. So so here I have for the first qubit, I have, you know, e to the 2 pi I times so this is, you know, I'm going to call this bit y sub n. And here I have, so this 0 dot xn, I could think about this as multiplying, you know, 2 to the n minus 1. This is sort of thinking about what happened in this circuit. I could think about getting this x sub n because I multiply 2 to the n minus 1 times the fraction x over 2 to the n. Okay, so let's, you know, let's let x be the integer, you know, x1 through xn. So it's the, this is the, you know, binary expansion of x. So I have this, but then I only have that phase when I have y sub n equals 1, right? If y sub n equals 0, then I would have no phase. So y sub n is going to be the bit corresponding to you know, that's labeling the state of this qubit. So if y sub n is 0, I have no phase. I have a phase of plus 1. And if y sub n is equal to 1, I have this phase. Okay, good. And then let's see what I have for each of these bits. So here I have e to the 2 pi I times, so here I have, you know, 2 to the n minus 2 times x divided by 2 to the n times y sub n minus 1. Right, so here, you know, I'm looking at the next bit. So, you know, over here, I'm going to have, you know, y sub n down to y sub 1. Somehow the order comes out opposite for x and y. So the phase associated with the next bit of the output y is, you know, is this, but only if y sub n minus 1 is 1. Otherwise, the phase is just 1. Is this okay? All right, and then so it continues like this, and I have e to the 2 pi I times, now over here I just have x divided by 2 to the n times y sub 1. Okay. So now what I can do is I can just, you know, collect this whole thing together, and what I see is that this is nothing but, so 1 over the square root of 2 to the n times the sum over all y's, and now, you know, let me sort of reinterpret this, right? So here y is a is an n-bit string, but I could think about that as representing an integer, right? So think about this y sub 1 through y sub n being the representation of some integer. But notice the way I write the integer x, I mean, the way I label the bits of the integer x is backward from the way I label the bits of the integer y. Okay, but that's fine. I can just think about this y as representing some integer from 0 to 2 to the n minus 1. And now the phase that I have is just e to the 2 pi I times the product of x and y divided by 2 to the n. Right? Because, you know, so I have this thing where I divide by 2 to the n. And now if I, you know, if I think of this y sub 1 as being, I can think of this y sub 1 as being the ones bit of y, the next one is the twos bit of y, et cetera. And, you know, so y sub n is going to be the bit of y that corresponds to the power 2 to the n minus 1, right? So if I, you know, basically I'm just using the fact that this integer y, you know, I'm letting the integer y be the sum of, you know, 2 to the I minus 1 times y sub I for I equals 1 to n. This is just expanding out the integer y in binary, thinking about these bits as the binary expansion of y. Right? So if I just do this, you know, in the sum, then I get out this. So this is what's called a Fourier basis state. This is the Fourier basis state labeled by x. And the Fourier transform, the quantum Fourier transform, is the transformation that takes x to the to this particular superposition of all of the basis states, right? So the QFT is the thing that sends this to this. So the thing that we want to do is actually the inverse quantum Fourier transform, because we're given a state of this form and we want to extract x from it, right? So the quantum Fourier transform sends x to this particular state. So we could call this x twiddle, which is 1 over the square root of 2 to the n, the sum over all y from 0 to 2 to the n minus 1, e to the 2 pi I xy over 2 to the n y. Or another way of writing this is that you can think about this QFT as a 2 to the n by 2 to the n matrix. And it's the unitary that sends this x to this superposition of y's. So it's the sum over all x and y from 0 to 2 to the n minus 1. So with a normalization factor of 1 over the square root of 2 to the n, e to the 2 pi I xy over 2 to the n x. Right, so we could think about this Hadamard transform when we took the n-fold tensor product of the Hadamard gate with itself. This was some matrix that had a bunch of plus or minus ones in it, well, with an overall normalizing factor of 1 over the square root of 2 to the n, and it gave us some unitary matrix, where all of the entries were different phases. And here we have some kind of analogous thing. We again have a 2 to the n by 2 to the n unitary matrix. Every entry of that matrix has the same magnitude, but now they have these complex phases. And this turns out to be quite a useful unitary transformation to have at our disposal if we want to run quantum algorithms. In particular, it will allow us to solve this phase estimation problem. Okay, this is probably a good point to stop and ask if there are questions. Yes?
Did you say that these are all subnormalizations?
Yes, that's right. So if I think about this set of states where I run over all the possible strings x, this gives me an orthonormal basis. And that has to be for this thing to be a unitary transformation, right? Because a unitary transformation is just a transformation between two orthonormal bases. So that would have to be the case. And that would be something that you could check, right? That would be a good exercise, actually, if it's not obvious to you that it's the case, that these states are orthonormal. I mean, I guess it's clear that they're normalized, right? Because if I sum up the magnitude squared of the amplitudes, you know, this magnitude is just 1. And I have the, you know, if I square this, I have 1 over 2 to the n, and I have 2 to the n terms. Right, so each of these states is normalized. And maybe slightly trickier thing is to see that they're orthogonal. So if you take two different strings, x and x prime, and you consider these states, they should be orthogonal to each other. If it's not clear to you why that's true, that's a really good exercise to do, maybe after class. Okay. Other questions? Good. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and so that's the output of our first circuit diagram.
That's right. This is the state we had. This is the state we wanted. And I just said, let's just define a transformation which sends this to this.
And so below that in the bottom line,
yes.
That is still the output from our circuit.
Yes, that's right. This is an expression for this. That's what I tried to indicate here. But. Well, the Fourier transform is the thing that sends this to this, because we called the thing that sends this to this the inverse QFT. So the QFT would send this to this. So this state is what I called X twiddle. This is equal to this is equal to X twiddle. Does that help? Other questions? Okay, good. So now the last thing we would like to see is how we can actually implement this by a quantum circuit, right? So, you know, we have this nice transformation. It has some very concise expression, some very concise mathematical expression. But, you know, we would like to actually finish this quantum circuit, right? The goal was to figure out how to use invocations of U gates, or actually controlled U gates, and actually controlled U to the 2 to the K gates. But how to use these gates together with some other, you know, not too complicated quantum circuit in order to actually figure out what the phase is. And actually, remember, we had no promise that phi was an n-bit binary fraction. So we also have to figure out how to deal with that case. So, well, you'll see that the solution to the latter problem is just to kind of declare victory. But we'll get there. The next thing we have to do is figure out how to actually finish this quantum circuit. So how can we apply some gates in order to get out the phase? But you'll see that the way that we've set up this problem, it's actually quite natural to just derive what the quantum Fourier transform is from the kind of state that we have as output. Okay, so now let's construct a circuit. And we'll actually be constructing a circuit for the inverse QFT, because that's what we want to do in this context. But of course, if you want a circuit for the QFT, you just run the circuit backwards. So we'll be really constructing a circuit for the QFT. Okay. So first, the first thing we might like to do is just read out the bit x of n, right? Because that's what I said we would do first. If we just apply a Hadamard gate, then we saw that we just get the bit x of n out. So that should be the first thing that we do, is we just apply a Hadamard gate to the top qubit. Okay, so maybe I should write the output of that circuit so we see what we're dealing with. So here we have 1 over the square root of 2, 0 plus e to the 2 pi I 0 dot xn 1. And then here we have 1 over root 2, 0 plus e to the 2 pi I 0 dot xn minus 1 xn 1. And then the last qubit is 1 over root 2, 0 plus e to the 2 pi I 0 dot x1 through xn 1. Okay, so these are our n qubits. And then what I said was, well, we could just apply a Hadamard gate here, and then the output would just be x of n. So that's great. So now we would like to figure out what to do to the next qubit. So remember, you know, if x of n is equal to 0, then we're all set. Then we just apply a Hadamard gate here, and we're done. But that's not necessarily going to work, because, you know, it could be that x sub n is equal to 1. And if x sub n is equal to 1, then we have some different situation. So what we would like to do is that if x sub n is equal to 1, in other words, if this qubit is in the 1 state, we would like to rotate away this phase. OK, so that's what we're going to do. So on this qubit, we're going to do a gate that I'm going to call R2 dagger, which will be, and maybe I'll just say what that is. So maybe I'll write it over here. So R2 will be equal to 1, 0, 0, I. So you know, this is exactly the inverse of this gate is exactly what we want to do in order to rotate away this phase. So here we're doing a controlled R2 dagger gate. So why is that? Because the phase that we have here is, well, if x sub n is equal to 1, we have, you know, e to the 2 pi I times 0 dot, well, we're just trying to rotate this away. So the phase we want to rotate is e to the 2 pi I times 0 dot 0, 1, right? So that's 1/4, right? So the phase is e to the 2 pi I over 4, i.e. e to the pi I over 2, you know, which is just I. So that's the phase which is sitting there that we want to get rid of if x sub n is equal to 1. Okay, but we want to get rid of that phase, so we want to rotate, you know, backwards. We want to do the inverse of that gate. So this is R2, and what we actually want to do is R2 dagger. Is this okay? All right. So now we do this, and then we do a Hadamard gate, and now we're finished with this qubit. Right? So now this qubit will definitely be in the state x sub n minus 1. This is an n, not an r. Yes? Yeah, you'll see. I mean, so we're going to need some analogous thing for all of the qubits, and well, I don't know. It's just a notational choice. So I do this because usually what people do is they just write down the circuit for the quantum Fourier transform, not for the inverse quantum Fourier transform. And these gates without the daggers are the ones you would write down in the quantum Fourier transform because you would be doing the inverse of this circuit. This is what I think of as, you know, the gate that I would have to apply in order to put this phase in. That's somehow more natural for me to think about. But then what I actually need to put in the circuit is the thing that undoes that transformation. Okay. So, sorry, other questions? Okay. So this is the circuit so far. So this is, you know, this whole circuit that's written on the board is the 2-qubit quantum Fourier transform, right? So this. Just this Hadamard gate, this was the 1-qubit quantum Fourier transform, because that's what we would do if we had just 1 qubit. And now if we have 2 qubits, this is the 2-qubit quantum Fourier transform. But now what I need to do is I need to continue like this, applying some similar sequence of gates in order to perform the entire n-qubit quantum Fourier transform. And let's see what's going to happen. So I'm going to continue like this, doing something analogous. And I think if I just show you what we do to the last qubit, this will kind of make it clear what the general term is. So we continue like this. So there's, you know, there are wires in here. And then for the last qubit, what do I have to do? Well, I have to rotate away this least significant bit, x sub n, depending upon, you know, whether. Well, depending upon, you know, so if x sub n was equal to 0, I have nothing to rotate away. And if x sub n is equal to 1, I have to rotate away some much smaller angle, right? So there's a gate here that I'm going to write as Rn dagger that I would perform, you know, conditional on the value of the bit x sub n, which is the output here. And so in general, what I'm going to have here is that Rk is just 1, 0, 0, e to the 2 pi I divided by 2 to the k. So this is what I mean by this is the notation for the gate R sub k in general. Okay, so the phase that I rotate by is you know, e to the 2 pi I divided by 2 to the k. Okay, so here I have, you know, something where if this is 1, it represents a phase of, you know, e to the 2 pi I over 2 to the n. So if I need to rotate away that phase, I need to do the gate Rn dagger. Is that okay? So I do this, and then I would do an Rn minus 1 dagger, conditional on the next qubit. And I continue like this. And the last thing that I would do would be an R2 dagger, conditional on the next qubit up, which is not actually shown in the picture. Let me just kind of insert it over here. So the next qubit up, there's some wire that's coming in from the left and going out to the right. OK. And then the last thing that I have to do is, of course, a Hadamard gate. Because after I've rotated away all these bits, I just have 0 dot x1 here. So if I apply a Hadamard gate to that state, it will just give me the state x1. So if it was a plus state, then x1 was 0. And if it was a minus state, then x1 was 1. So now if I do this whole circuit, You know, the last bit will be in the state x sub 1. And, you know, the next bit up will be in x sub 2, so this bit. And then this will be, this will end in the state x sub n, and this will end in the state x sub n minus 1. So this whole thing gives me a circuit for the n qubit quantum Fourier transform. And of course, I did the analysis of the circuit, you know, assuming that these bits, assuming that this was a Fourier basis state, in other words, assuming that the thing that I wanted to produce over here was a computational basis state. But of course, the circuit works regardless of what input I put in, because the circuit is described some linear transformation. So if I put in some superposition of the Fourier basis states, I get out the corresponding superposition of the computational basis states. Okay? So how big is this circuit? Well, not too big, right? So first of all, it only consists of 1 and 2 qubit gates. The gates are not done, you know, the gates that appear here are not part of the universal set of gates that we talked about in the first or second lecture, but you could easily implement them, you know, approximately using any universal set of gates without too much overhead, so that's not a problem. So let's just think about how many gates there actually are in this circuit. So maybe you can tell me, like, just using big O notation, not actually counting up the gates precisely, but you know, roughly speaking, how does the number of gates scale with n? Yes. That's right, it goes like n squared. So this uses big O of n squared gates. And that's not too many. So that's a number which is polynomial in n. So we would say that this is an efficient quantum circuit. And it, you know, it has some nice compact description as well. So, so this actually gives us some uniform family of quantum circuits. So this uses order n squared gates. And actually, something that you can see is that you could really get by with even fewer gates if you were willing to only do the transformation approximately. So notice that some of the gates in this circuit correspond to rotations by extremely small angles. Like this gate is a rotation by an angle which is, you know, exponentially close to 1. It's e to the 2 pi I over 2 to the n. And if n is large, that's an extremely small and basically irrelevant phase. So if I just got rid of this gate, you know, if n was large, I would have something which was very close to the original quantum Fourier transform. So something you can think about is, you know, how could you maybe delete some gates from the circuit to get something that was still actually pretty good? That's a nice thing to think about. Okay. So, so maybe I should kind of stop and mention what the big picture is then for you know, how we would actually solve this phase estimation problem. So let's you know, now we have the circuit, so let's see what the big picture is in terms of how phase estimation works. And you know, we still have to deal with this problem that the phase is not necessarily an exact n-bit binary fraction. So somehow we have to do something to take care of that. But we'll see that it's not too bad. Okay, so so here's the big picture. So we have the ability to implement this controlled U gate. And so what we did was, well, we prepared n qubits, you know, in order to get this n bit, in order to extract these n bits about the phase phi, we prepared n qubits in the zero state. And we Hadamard transformed each of them. And then we did our controlled U to the 2 to the k gates. And you know, there's a nice way of thinking about what this circuit is, this thing which is drawn here, which is that, you know, if the contents of the register that's acting as the control is in the state x, representing some integer x, what's applied here is really just the gate U to the x. Right? Because you can think about x as being the binary expansion of some integer. And if that integer was x, what we applied here was just U to the x. So let me actually draw this in a more compact way, which is that I have some big control, which looks at the entire value which is written in this register. So this, think about this register as storing some integer x. And then what I do down here is just a controlled U to the x gate. So what that means is that if the value here is x, I apply the gate U to the x. Okay, and I'm applying this gate on the quantum state psi, which is putting some information about the eigenvalue into the phase. This, incidentally, I mean, this is kind of reminiscent of this phase kickback thing that we saw. So we're using this ability to perform this controlled U gate to put some information into the phase. Here, the information is sort of already naturally in the phase because it's a you know, an eigenphase of a unitary that we want to estimate. Okay, so then here we have just the state psi coming out. And now we have a bunch of a bunch of qubits coming out here. And now the information about the phase has been kicked back, in a sense, into this register that we use to control the unitary operation. And we want to figure out what x is. And what we did was we said, well, we'll just do the inverse quantum Fourier transform. So this whole box represents, you know, the circuit of order n squared gates, which is shown on the board above. Okay, and then the claim was that over here, the state that we get out this x is not the same as that other x. Let me change this to z. Sorry about this. This is a z, then we do a u to the z. Okay, so this will be ket x if, e to the I phi, well, so if phi is equal to 2 pi times 0 dot, x 1 through xn. Okay, so this is the phase estimation procedure. We have to have the ability to perform a controlled u to the z. And now, of course, you know, we have to do here a linear number of controlled u to the 2 to the k gates, but we do have to implement u to the 2 to the k for a very large k. So, of course, in the QFT, there are only polynomially many gates. But here, there could be exponentially many gates if all you have at your disposal is the ability to do a controlled u, and you have to potentially do that, you know, 2 to the n minus 1 times to do this u to the 2 to the n minus 1 gate. In order to make this whole thing really efficient, it will be important that we be able to apply this efficiently for very large values of z, for exponentially large z. But we'll see that when we use this in the application de Schor's algorithm, that we can actually do that. So there'll be a way of implementing this thing in polynomial time, even when z is exponentially large. Okay, so there's some detail there that you have to think about when you apply this to some particular application. But you have to think about that on a case-by-case basis. Okay, but then the last thing to see is, you know, what can we say about the case where this x is not an exact n-bit binary fraction of 2 pi? Where the phase is not an exact n-bit binary fraction of 2 pi. Okay, so what if phi does not have this form? Okay, so I said before what you should do is just declare victory. So this is indeed what you should do. So if you would like to get out a good n-bit estimate of phi, you should just do this circuit anyway, even though the binary expansion of the phase doesn't necessarily terminate. So there could be some, you know, less significant bits over here. And because of that, kind of the motivation that we had for this whole circuit doesn't really make sense. Like in particular, the first qubit will not necessarily just deterministically give us the least significant bit of the phase, because it could be making a mistake because of the even less significant bits that are actually there. Right? So, I mean, that seems kind of bad, actually, if you look at the picture, because then you might think, well, there's some chance that you're off for the first qubit, and then these errors will kind of propagate, and it sounds like it could be troublesome, right? It sounds like you could get something completely wrong at the output, but it turns out that it's actually not so bad. So you can show that if you just apply this kind of blindly, then what you get is very likely to be a good estimate of the, you know, the best n-bit approximation to the phase of this form, even if there are less significant bits. So you can show that the output of this thing, which is the phase estimation circuit, so the output of the n-bit phase estimation circuit gives the best n-bit approximation when you do the phase estimation circuit, maybe we think about this x as giving us some integer. So then this would be, phi over 2 pi times 2 to the n. So this is the integer that would be output when you think about, you know, performing a measurement here in the computational basis and then interpreting the value as an integer. Okay, so what you're going to do is you're going to get the best, you know, the closest possible integer to this value. So if this thing may not be an integer in general, but take the closest integer to that value, if it's exactly halfway in between, round either way as you like, the claim is that it will give you this best approximation with at least constant probability. With probability at least some constant. For some C independent event. So, you know, this gives you the right answer. This gives you the best possible approximation with probability at least some constant. And then if you want to boost that probability, you can do that using various standard techniques. Like you could imagine repeating the circuit many times and you know, taking the median of the estimates or something like that. And if you do something along those lines, it will boost the probability with which you get this best possible estimate. So alas, we're out of time, so we're not going to show this now. But you will have an opportunity to show this, I guess, in the next tutorial, the tutorial this afternoon. You know, this is a great exercise. So basically what you have to do now is think about the case where phi is not necessarily of this form, apply this quantum circuit to the state that you're given, and you know, see what you can say about the probability that you get this best n-bit approximation. OK, questions? Yes.
So if n is larger, then the approximation is more accurate?
You mean if you take larger values of n, do you get a more accurate approximation? Yes, absolutely. So, you know, of course, with some constant probability. There will always be some constant probability that you get some junk. But with at least some good probability, you will get the best n-bit approximation. So if you take n bigger and bigger, you're getting a better and better approximation because now you're getting, you know, at least with constant probability, you're getting n bits of precision. Yeah, yes?
So, is it
times 2 to the n. Well, this is the integer that's read out if you do a measurement over here. So, so I divided phi by 2 pi because there's this factor of 2 pi. And then to make this thing into an integer, you have to multiply by 2 to the n. You have to shift the period over n times. That's sort of, you know, the way we were labeling states over here, where we were labeling the states that come out of these registers by integers between 0 and 2 to the n minus 1. I mean, this is just bookkeeping, I guess. I mean, you could think about it, you know, you could think about this thing giving you some estimate of this, where you just put the decimal point at the, put the binary point at the beginning, and then you don't have to multiply by this. Other questions? Okay, great. So tomorrow we'll see how we can use this quantum Fourier transform and this phase estimation circuit in order to solve the factoring problem with a quantum computer.